When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Don't listen to it. Crows are all liars. I know a story about a crow.
I hate your stories.
I know a story about a boy who hated stories. I could tell you about Sir Duncan the Tall. Those were always your favourites.
Those weren't my favourites. My favourites were the scary ones.
Oh, my sweet summer child, what do you know about fear? Fear is for the winter, when the snows fall 100 feet deep. Fear is for the long night, when the sun hides for years, and children are born and live and die, all in darkness. That is the time for fear, my little lord, when the white walkers move through the woods. Thousands of years ago, there came a night that lasted a generation. Kings froze to death in their castles, same as the shepherds in their huts. And women smothered their babies rather than see them starve, and wept, and felt the tears freeze on their cheeks. So is this the sort of story that you like? In that darkness, the white walkers came for the first time. They swept through cities and kingdoms, riding their dead horses, hunting with their packs of pale spiders, big as hounds.
What are you telling him now?
Only what the little lord wants to hear.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to our podcast. I'm Duncan.
And this is Travis.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 45. This week, we have our friend Travis joining us. You guys may remember him as Obsidian Crow from our Still Smug Book Talk collaborations and from his Obsidian Crow cosplay and leather working. And you definitely know about his dog, his wolf dog, Greywind. Welcome back, Crow.
Thanks for bringing me aboard.
I'm so used to calling you Crow now.
You can still call me that. That's fine. Yeah, just thanks for bringing me back on. I really liked the Still Smug, and I'm glad to be a part of the, I don't know if you should call it the real podcast, but the main episodes.
The main podcast, yeah.
The main podcast, yeah.
So in this episode, this is our third episode of our series rewatch for Game of Thrones, and we're covering season one, episode 3, Lord Snow. And just so you guys know, we'll be talking about it in context of the entire series thus far, so spoilers will be included for potentially up to Season 7, Episode 7. So without any further ado, let's jump into our top five. What's your number five, Travis?
So my number five is speaking of spoilers, the many plot seeds that are being planted.
Awesome.
I just really liked, I have a couple of notes on that. For example, one of them was when Jorah took off to essentially betray Dany.
Right.
When she finds out she's pregnant. I never actually caught that the first time I watched that. Because, you don't really know.
Yeah, you have no idea immediately.
So I was like, oh, he's just taking off in the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The handmaiden comes in and tells them that she's pregnant, and immediately he's like, I need to go to Kohor. Like, so after you know what's happening with that, it's like, oh my god, right? No hesitation. He immediately gets up to ride off to Kohor and inform the king. And he tells the Blood Rider sitting there, it's kind of funny, he says, you know, the guy's like, oh, well, the Khalasar is riding to Vase Dothrak. And he's like, I'll catch up with you. You know, like, it's easy to find the Khalasar, which hints, you know, that he's going to catch up with the Khalasar. It hints that his deed will eventually catch up to him as well.
Exactly. Gets him into another banishment.
Yeah. Yep.
Another note on that, in regards to all of the plot seeds that are coming up, Baelish, the cat's paw.
He sort of plants the seed on Tyrion. Right, bastard.
What was my other one? There was one more. Sorry. The kind of plot seed part kind of signals, or symbols, I should say. The early proposal for help from Cersei, I kind of caught that when I think it was Aemon, Mormont, and Tyrion were talking up on the wall.
Oh, right.
Because, I mean, he's trying to get more people to man the wall. He's like, you know, send word to your sister.
Yeah, send word to your sister, the queen.
Yeah, the queen. I need help.
That's funny because they're asking her for help specifically in the finale.
Yeah, I was like, oh hey, that happens again.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I didn't even catch that.
And then just the early relationship between Jon and Tyrion, I found that was
really funny.
Major, I mean, because this is really the only time they see each other for what, 7 years? So yeah, they kind of had to have that little icebreaker or meeting, you know.
Yeah, and it seemed like their last episode, their relationship was off to a rocky start as Tyrion is sort of giving Jon shit for being stupid and joining the Night's Watch to defend us from Snarks and Grumpkins, you know, and everything like that.
Snarks and Grumpkins.
And at the end, he sort of, you know, hands him an olive branch by giving him the flask of wine and tell him to have a drink. So this episode, we sort of see their friendship blossom a little bit as Tyrion saves Jon from being from having his throat slit by those three hoods. Who is it? Gran, Pip, and that douchebag
Rast, yeah.
Rast or something.
That was one of the things I noticed as well. You know, I'm like, oh hey, they're gonna become like really, really good friends. Well, at least two of them.
Yeah.
But just to see him on the early stages, you know, he's out there whooping them all in the yard.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. He's kicking all their asses, and Tyrion puts him in his place for that and tells him, like, look, dudes, you know, these dudes, you know, none of them have probably even held a real sword beforehand. You know, give them a break. Like, lighten up on them. You're a bastard, but you grew up in a castle, dude. You know, like, get a grip.
They hate me because I'm better than them.
Yeah, better than no one, like Benjen says. Yeah, any other points?
Just the whole Baelish leading down that whole trail. I think there was a part where he says, you're a true friend to Kat, which I was just like, oh.
Oh, right. And, yeah, it's interesting, too. Kat says to Ned later on in the episode, or he says to her, actually, he still loves you, talking about Baelish. And Kat says, does he? You know, and I think that sort of hints that Baelish can't really love. It's more about possessing for him. So we see that with Sansa as well towards the end, you know, or the latter half of the series. He's fawning over her and protecting her and everything, but he doesn't really care about her, as we see when he sells her off to the Boltons. She's just a pawn in his plan, just a possession that he craves.
And this is like, well, I mean, the whole cat's paw dagger. I mean, this is really the only season, I believe, that we see it, and then it disappears for years, and then you can kind of forget about it, you know, as you're watching the show.
Yep, and then Littlefinger's got it again.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so my number five is Benjen Stark. Just seeing him again, which is really cool. It's been so long since he's been on the show, aside from his brief returns over the past couple seasons, that I hadn't really remembered much about the details of him, but watching it now, it's like he's definitely a Stark. You know, as Baelish said in the episode, he said Stark's quick tempers and slow minds. And I don't really think Benjen has a slow mind per se, but he's definitely got a quick temper. He sort of puts John in his place up on the wall when John wants to go ranging and tells him, you know, you're not a ranger. You're better than no one. You know, here people earn what they get, and they get it when they earn it, you know?
Yeah, you just got to build yourself up.
Yeah, so that was cool. He's, you know, he's hard and strong like Ned, and he puts Tyrion in his place as well, like telling him about how how they are honorable people up there and they do this stuff. It may be that they're not protecting them from much right now, but they're sacrificing everything they have so plump little lords like him can be comfortable. Tyrion's response there is funny too. He says to Yoren, do you think I'm plump?
That actually, your number five kind of relates a little bit to my number one, so I'll go into that later.
Okay. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's sad to see Benjen leave basically to never be seen again and to die or almost die or whatever the case is with him. So yeah, it's just really cool seeing Benjen again. So yeah, that's my number five.
I totally agree. Benjen was, I mean, you don't see him for 6 years. And then when he comes back into play, you're like, oh wow, there's another Stark we kind of forgot about.
Yeah, totally. An adult Stark.
Yeah, an adult one.
Yeah. What's your number four?
My number four is Jamie and Ned in the throne room again.
Nice.
I just really like how it mirrors to the day that the Mad King fell, because Ned Stark comes walking in just like he did in this episode.
Right, to find Jamie.
Find Jamie with the Mad King dead, and just the whole relationship between Ned and Jamie. They're just two characters that, well, at the beginning you kind of hate Jamie, but you know, over the years you start to grow to like Jamie.
Yeah.
But just the relationship and the differences between the two and how they are and how they play the game, essentially.
And there's similarities between the two as well. You know, they're both living with their own chosen form of dishonor. Ned chose to protect John and harbor the dishonor of, gain the dishonor on his reputation of being a cheater and fathering a bastard. Whereas Jaime chose to protect the inhabitants of King's Landing and take the dishonor onto his name of being a kingslayer. So they're both living with the repercussions of the sacrifices of their own honor they've made for a higher cause, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just seeing where they are in, well, I mean, Ned doesn't make it past season one, but seeing how the characters are now, at least Jamie, the way he evolves throughout the 7 seasons, just seeing him in this light is kind of like the golden Prince Charming, you know, in a way.
Yeah. I think he's definitely been influenced by Ned.
Yeah. I would say, what was it that he said? Do you tell yourself that when you go to sleep at night about you're trying to avenge my father?
Yeah. Feeling like justice.
Justice, yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool interaction. Ned tells him, oh, that's some handsome armor you've got. Not a scratch on it. Right? And Jamie's like, yeah, people have been swinging at me for years.
And they always seem to miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're kind of throwing jabs back and forth, tossing barbs. And there's a moment where, because Jamie doesn't realize necessarily that Littlefinger has pitted these families against each other yet. You know, he doesn't think Ned has any reason to, at this point, other than their previous history, to specifically hate him or whatever like that. So I think Jaime tries to reach out an olive branch here and like get serious and try to gain Ned as an ally for a minute. When he tells him, you know, he starts off kind of taunting him by saying, you know, it must be strange for you to be back in this room where know, I was standing right here the day it happened when the Mad King burned your father and, you know, made your brother strangle himself to death. And he eventually turns it into, you know, saying, when I watched the Mad King die, I remembered him laughing as your father burned. It felt like justice, you know, and it like kind of like reaching out to Ned and trying to connect with him and, you know, stating that it was wrong what the Mad King did. And Ned spurns him and says, oh, like you were saying, is that what you tell yourself at night? Like that it was justice. You served him well when it was safe. You know, and Jaime looks like really taken aback at that moment after he had tried to do something, like tried to connect and be good and show him that he did something that was good on some level. You know, he avenged his father, and I think it hurt him that Ned rejected that olive branch. You could see it in his face, his eyes when he's reacting to Ned there.
It's got to be kind of weird to, you know, be in Jamie's position. You're trying to essentially suck up to, you know, this really honorable guy, knowing that, you know, a couple days ago you just pushed his son out the window.
Yeah, like, and knowing, like, he's going to be around working with you essentially for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, because I don't think at that moment, well, he had to have known that he was coming to make him Hand of the King. Cause that was the whole purpose of them going down there. Yeah, I don't know. Things you do for love, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't really have much of a choice in his eyes at that moment.
Well, he didn't expect Bran to wake up either, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Anything else for your number four?
No, I mean, that was just one of the highlights of the episode for me, so I placed that at number four. What about you?
All right. My number four is Arya and Cyrio Pharrell.
Yes. The first sword of Braavos.
Yeah, I just had a big smile on my face watching it. Maisie Williams is, I think her performance is great here. Though just the way they're interacting feels really genuine, you know, the way Cyrio is kind of like putting her in her place but like being playful about it, and she's like smiling at him, and I just thought her performance was really cute in this scene. Very believable.
It was really good to see Cyrio again, because
yeah,
I really missed that actor.
Yeah, he's the man.
What was it? He calls it the Braavos dance and the water dance.
Yep. So funny, too. He tosses her the sword, and she misses it, and he's like, tomorrow you will catch it, you know?
What do we say to death?
Not today. He kind of reminded me of Borat a little bit.
Yeah.
Just the way he talks.
You've heard you've probably heard the theory about Cyrio.
Oh, but Jaqen H'ghar?
Yeah,
I don't know if I buy it or not, but
I'm not sure either. It's just one of those things that I have read up on.
Yeah, he didn't seem like he had great chances of getting out of that scenario where he basically sacrifices himself to save Arya in a few episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
But then again, you know, the Hound sort of casts doubt on his death by saying, you know, the greatest fucking swordsman ever killed by Meryn fucking Trant. You know, like, it's like, if he's that good, you know, he's like, what did she say? He only had a wooden sword. The greatest fucking swordsman only had a wooden sword.
It didn't pay out for him in the end, though.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? He could be alive. He could have escaped somehow. Or, I mean, I would love it if he was alive. He's such a great character. I kind of think he's dead, though, sadly.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there's some really good lessons in this. You know, the sword is as heavy as it needs to be to make you strong. Right off the bat, he's getting her to turn side face so that her skinny little body's not a target, not as big a target. Explains to her the steel must be part of your arm. You know, can you drop part of your arm? Like, you need a delicate grip, but it's got to be part of you at the same time, which is got to be a difficult balance to attain.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sounds like playing a guitar.
Exactly, you are one with the guitar.
Yeah, very light, but you know, solid at the same time. I like how he told her that all men are made of water.
Yes.
Reminded me of Bruce Lee. very Bruce Lee the whole time. You know about Bruce Lee and his philosophy of water.
Yeah.
You know, where water can ebb, it can flow, it can crash, it can take the shape of any object it fills. Be water, you know. Which is pretty badass philosophy. So I feel like the Braavos style of sword fighting sort of embodies this, which is really cool to see. What did you think about that scene?
I actually wrote down a couple of notes about it. Not too much, but did you happen to notice the interaction of Ned? First, he's kind of smiling, and you know, he's like, "Oh, this is cool." Like, she's learning. She's you know, she's gaining all this knowledge, learning how to use her sword that John gave her. And then his smile just goes to kind of a
blank
like a blank frown. Like, he's like realizing, like, oh crap.
And he seems to be having like a post-traumatic stress disorder, like flashback moment where you can hear all these steel swords clanging and obviously like a battlefield and pretty hardcore.
Yeah. I wrote that same exact thing. Wrote it down, the swords, like all the clanging and the metal, and just kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, we'll have to analyze that a little further. My number two is Ned, so we'll get more into Ned point. Yeah, there's other great lines with Sirio. Boy, girl, you're a sword, that is all.
You're a sword.
You know? He's such a great, great character. The actor here, I can't remember his name, but he's just delightful. That's like the best word for it. Like his flamboyance and his enthusiasm for everything. And he's just like, that'd be a great teacher to have. You know what I mean? Keeps you excited about the subject matter, and he's stern, but also like very effective and gets you engaged and whatnot.
I don't think we ever see any more Swords of Braavos. I mean, he was the former first sword, but I mean,
We don't see any of the first swords for sure. We don't really see many people from Braavos,
and
definitely not any swords of Braavos, I don't think. Oh, there's another cool moment where he says, "You're not holding a battle axe, you're holding a," and Arya jumps in and goes, "A needle."
And then his smile, which is said it all.
Yeah, just so. Like, that was cool. I love her needle. Sansa's got her sewing needles. Arya's got her needle, you know?
Yeah, she keeps it all the way until season 7, so
it paid off. She doesn't keep it all the time, but she retrieves it. Yeah, she gets it back and then keeps it. John lost his sword once too, though, so.
Hers was stolen as well once.
Yep.
I'm forgetting his name. But when they're like, she's like, "He's got needle." It's in like season 4.
He used it to kill Lami.
Yeah.
The fuck's a Lami?
That quote.
I can't remember who that is either at this moment. It's Polliver, right? Isn't it Polliver?
Yeah, Polliver.
Yep.
We'll get to that eventually.
Yeah. Anything else for Arya and Sirio?
No. I mean, it kind of relates to my number three.
Jump right into it. Number three.
So my number three was Arya and Ned's relationship.
Nice.
I really liked, I mean, it's similar to her and John's, but it's different because,
it is.
It's not exactly the same, but
there are elements of similarity. Like Ned ends up supporting her for what she wants to do.
He's
a little more hesitant or protective about it, but the same spirit as John. He's backing her, and he's, you know, he enjoys her for who she is. Whereas John is like all in and encouraging it. Ned is not necessarily encouraging it, but he's not discouraging her unladylike behavior either. Same area, just different degrees of the spectrum with her and with John and Ned and her relationship, right?
Yeah, exactly. In this episode, I think they have a few just Arya and Ned scenes.
Yep.
They keep having these talks, which I think is more than, I mean, with all of his children, I think that's the most that Ned has these one-on-one conversations with is Arya. Because we don't really get to see him talk with Rob very much, or old Bran fell, and then Rickon is tiny.
Yeah, we don't really get to see him interact much with Bran or Rickon at all. A little bit with Jon. Do we see him talk to Rob at all, really?
Not really.
Yeah, I didn't
think it's just so. Kind of Rob raises his banners once he finds out about his father, but other than that, there's not that I can think of.
Right.
I really liked the scene where Arya was just sitting there stabbing the table.
Oh yeah, that was funny.
Going off about the who was it? The Septa.
Yeah, Septa Mordane says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Practicing." And practicing for what? And she says, "For the prince." For Prince Joffrey, which is kind of funny because she also is openly admitting to planning on killing the queen in season 7. So she's openly talking about murdering members of the royal family repeatedly throughout the series, which is pretty classic.
Yeah. And then he, he's essentially teaching Arya about how the way things are, just how they are. When they're having, I think it was the end of the episode when they're having their one-on-one chat. He's telling her that, you know, Sansa is going to side with Joffrey no matter what, even if it's a lie.
Right. She's called in front of the queen and asked to lie about the prince, and she's betrothed to him. So she has to defend him and can't lie about him. And fucking Sansa.
I think it's kind of hard for Arya to hear that coming from her father, considering the man he was.
Right. All about honor and whatnot. For him to condone lying is unusual, so to speak.
Even though he has the biggest lie out there.
Right.
What about honor. You?
My number 3 is the looming threat of winter. Which we get repeatedly in this episode. The first time, sort of starting with old Nan talking with Bran and offering to tell him a story. And he says he hates her stories. And she tells him she knows a story about a boy who hated stories. And he doesn't want to hear about Sir Duncan the Tall. Boo. But he does like scary stories. And we get that epic monologue where she goes off about how fear is for the long night. And about how the night lasted generations long, so children were all born and died in darkness and everything, and it's interrupted by Rob when he opens the door and scares Bran. But that's just a legendary moment in this show, right?
The I don't know what her name is, but the actor who plays old Nan,
yeah,
she did
awesome.
A really good job at just the major creep factor.
Yeah, totally.
You know, just kind of looming in and. Or leaning in, I should say, and just kind of, you know, getting him super into the stories, and then just, you know, gets up and goes and has her dinner.
Yeah.
Thousands of years ago, there came a night that lasted a generation. Kings froze to death in their castles, same as the shepherds in their huts, and women smothered their babies rather than see them starve, and wept and felt the tears freeze on their cheeks. So is this the sort of story you like, Bran?
He just nods. You're really good at that. You could, you should be in like the video games and, you know,
doing
voice
old lady
over
voices.
Old man.
In that darkness, the White Walkers came for the first time.
I like the part about the packs of pale spiders as big as hounds.
You know, I wonder if we're ever going to get to see spiders.
Like, we better, man. That would be so cool.
That's one of the things that I've been looking out for in the show, you know, having read the books.
Yeah, there's it's interesting. There's a couple of different characters who seem to be prophetic and who are right about many things. And old Nan is one of the characters whose intelligence seems very accurate. As we progress and learn more, like she's right about the White Walkers and about all this stuff about the Long Night, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's just pretty cool. A lot of other, you know, people with prophecies or who tell us unusual things, they're wrong, you know, like Melisandre half the time or whatever. But old Nan seems to be right on the money about this. Then we also hear more about the winter when Tyrion is up at the wall and he's sort of confronted by Jor Mormont and Aemon, Maester Aemon, who are telling him, you know, Maester Aemon asks him how long was the longest winter he'd experienced. And he's, what'd he say? He's been through eight or nine winters. The longest was 3 years. And Aemon points out that this summer has been 9 years long and winter is coming, you know.
So. Doesn't he say something along the lines of the Starks are always right at some point?
Yeah. The Starks are always right. Eventually they're always right. Winter is coming. And you know, a long summer means an extra long and brutal winter. So they go on to tell him about how there's reports of the White Walkers and, you know, wildlings that they've captured coming south who say that they've seen the White Walkers. And he talks about how, you know, people at ports, the sailors say they've seen krakens and all this other nonsense. And Jor points out that one of our rangers, you know, swore he saw the White Walkers and they killed his friends right until Ned Stark cut his head off. And you can see that statement sort of sets Tyrion aback. He sort of just stares at Jor when he's telling him that and doesn't really give much of a vocal reaction at all. It kind of surprises him. So you can tell he's sort of open to the idea, although still pretty much at this point thinks it's bullshit. But that just, you know, sets up for the fact that later when he has evidence or more evidence from more reliable people that he would end up buying it. He even said in season 7 that Mormont told him that that they'd seen the White Walkers and he trusted Mormont, you know. So we know that it has an effect in his future mind state for sure.
Yeah. And Mormont is a believer at this point too.
Yeah,
because of
definitely.
The arm.
Oh yeah. Oh well, no, that hasn't even happened yet.
Oh yeah, no, that's right. I'm ahead. See what happens when you rewatch the seasons.
Yeah, it's all jumbled.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty. So that scene is pretty ominous. We get the looming threat, and Aemon and Mormont beg Tyrion to go south and ask his sister, the queen, for help, which is funny they end up doing the same thing in this current season.
So the looming threat, it's always coming.
Always coming. So that's pretty much it for my number 3. What about your number 2?
Okay, moving along to my number 2. I'm kind of on a roll with these. It's Robert, Jaime, and Barristan and their war stories.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a great scene.
I really liked it, where Robert was talking about how his first kill was a Tarly boy at the Battle of Summerhall, which for, you know, people who are listening who are not in depth with the history, Robert also won 3 battles in a single day at Summerhall.
Oh, damn, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's like a pretty intense, like just that specific day. So that was the first day that he killed someone. And it was also the Battle of Summerhall, which was, you know, there was 3 battles that took place over that day. And just hearing the, you know, he was talking about Jaime and, you know, he's like, so when was your first kill? And seeing Barristan again, just kind of on the Kingsguard, that was really nice. I really liked that.
It's cool too. Barristan's first kill, he put a lance through a guy's heart. And Robert said, oh, that's nice and quick. You know, and when he talks about killing the Tarly boy, he says he smashed his breastplate in with his hammer. Gods, was I strong then, you know? And right as he's got his war hammer over his head and he's about to crash it down, and the guy says, wait, and he crushes his head anyway. But yeah, that's a pretty brutal depiction of that.
I like his jab at Jaime, where he was like, so what was your first kill, not including old men?
Yeah, that was like, funny too.
Right at the always comes back to the Kingslayer
and
part.
He continues taunting him too, like, really, you want to taunt the guy who killed the last king?
Like,
he's like, serving as a glorified bodyguard.
Yeah, how do you feel standing outside my door?
Well, I fuck your sister. pretty brutal. And the other thing, one of our listeners, Ellen Clark, actually emailed us a couple weeks ago and mentioned that she was rewatching this and noticed that he's talking about, Robert's talking about killing a Tarly boy. And then he also says, they never tell you how they all shit their pants when they die. And how they all shit themselves. So it's just like how Dickon Tarly was talking about how they never tell you how smells of shit, how they all shit themselves.
Oh, wow.
Season 7.
Oh. Yeah,
right,
wow.
Right before he died.
It's a really good catch. That's small.
Ellen Clark, good job with that. That was a
definitely
really awesome detail to catch. Anything else about that scene you wanted to mention?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right.
Just going back into the whole Summer Hall backstory. I really like it when the show drops small little, I guess, not really book nods because it's still in the show, but, you know, they don't go too much into it, but you kind of have to know the backstory to understand what they're fully talking about. Summer Hall is also where Sir Duncan and Aegon the Fifth perished.
Right. And it's where Rhaegar was born.
Yep, I wrote that down as well. Rhaegar was born. There was also a prophecy. What did they say? Prophecy by a, and I quote, this is from the book, a midget woods witch. that would have been born by Aerys and Rhaella,
yeah, that the prince was promised would be born from the Aerys and Rhaella line, which Jon Snow and Daenerys both
come from.
Just some cool background info.
And
Rhaegar would often, you know, go and visit Summer Hall, and when he would come back, he would have written a tragic song and would play it and leave everybody crying. Mm-hmm. Rhaegar always wanted to lighten up the mood.
But yeah, so just hearing the you know, Summer Hall mentioned, you know, because we never actually get to see it in the show. So
yeah. Oh, and we get that cool moment from Jaime where, you know, Robert's taunting him still about the Mad King. What did he say when he stabbed him in the back? Did he call you a traitor? Did you do all this? Did he say you're a coward? And Jamie's like, actually, he just, you know, he said the same thing he'd been saying for hours. Burn them all.
Burn them all.
Which is super fucking creepy. And obviously that haunts Jamie to this day.
It's just one of his, something that's just going to be stuck with him for the rest of his life.
And considering Cersei's later propensity for fire and blowing things up and shit, it makes sense. You know, Jamie, it's not surprising that Jamie ends up bailing on her eventually. All right. Anything else about your number two?
Just the last little finishing touch that we kind of, we get to hear Sir Duncan, his name dropped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's always good.
In the war stories. I mean, well, the war stories part was about Summer Hall, which is where Sir Duncan and Aegwyr and then Old Nan mentioned Sir Duncan.
Sir Duncan, yep.
Which I believe is the only time. No. There's one other time when Jaime is looking at the Kingsguard book that Sir Duncan the Tall is mentioned.
Right. Joffrey mentions Joffrey's flipping through it, and then goes to make fun of Jaime for having a short page of deeds.
Yeah. He's looking at Jaime's page. That's what it was.
His page is in half an inch shy of an inch, as we can say. All right. So my number two is Ned in general. And yeah, it was cool seeing Ned arriving in King's Landing and stepping into that room where all that took place, just like the first time he walked in there when Jaime was there. And then Ned tries to give Sansa a doll and she rejects it. I haven't played with dolls since I was 8 years old. And may I be excused? And she's being all snotty and whatnot. And Ned ends up saying, war is easier than daughters. And so when he's watching his daughter fight,
you know,
that may have, it's sort of, there's a couple lines in this episode that hint at Ned being like sort of a traumatized dude, scarred by war, you can definitely say. And then seeing his daughter like practicing a fight just even rubbed it in even further and triggered that flashback. I liked how he, you know, he came and visited Arya and found Needle. And saw it was Mickon's maker's mark on the blade, you know, the Winterfell smith.
Blacksmith, yeah.
And he asks where she got it, and she doesn't respond. And she says, you shouldn't be playing with swords. And Arya says, I wasn't playing, and I don't want to be a lady. You know, ladies don't play with swords, he said. You know, she comforts Arya when she says that, I just wanted to learn, and I asked Micah to practice with me. It was my fault, and Ned, you know, tells her it wasn't her fault that the butcher's boy died. Nothing she could have done about that, you know, it was all the evil Lannister family and whatnot.
I have a little note on that. You know, you just said that they, or that she's not a lady. I find it kind of funny that Sansa names her Direwolf Lady.
Right.
And the names of the direwolves just kind of relate to them, you know. I mean, she named hers after Nymeria.
Right, the strong warrior woman. And how does Summer...
Summer was named for being born in the summer and how Bran is a summer child.
Right. What about Ghost? How does that relate to Jon?
Ghost, you know, he essentially is...
he's a ghost.
A ghost. Kind of. Like, yeah. You know, he's not really
he's
a star.
He's not really who he is. Like, he's the living ghost of the Targaryen that nobody knew was born.
Exactly.
What about Grey Wind for Robb?
Grey Wind, I think in the books he mentioned something along the lines of Grey Wind's name, and when he named it, or when he named him Grey Wind, it had to do with the... I think it had to do with his speed on the battlefield or something.
Oh, nice.
I could be wrong a little bit on that, but it's in my memory, just briefly. And then Shaggy Dog.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, that's basically Rickon, you know, just wandering around some... unsupervised as his parents leave Winterfell forever. Let's see, what else is there? It was funny, Ned tells Arya not to stab Sansa with the blade, which she ends up not doing overall, so that's pretty cool. And he, like we were saying, he encourages her unladylike behavior by saying, you know, if you're going to own a sword, you better know how to use it. And he hires Syrio Forel to teach Arya the ways of the Braavos dance, which is pretty cool. I liked how he got all pissed off when Littlefinger brings him to go meet Catelyn at the whorehouse, and he thinks he's just yanking his chain, bringing him to a whorehouse. So he chokes him out, just like Jon Snow choked him out. Choked out Littlefinger.
I wrote that in my notes. I wrote Jon and Ned choke and Baelish.
Yeah, and they have the same camera angle, and Peter Baelish is gripping up their fingers, trying to unhook their claws each time. The same like over the shoulder camera angle. So that's cool to see that.
He doesn't have very good luck with Starks.
It's Starks in general, yeah. Starks. Ah, the Starks. Quick tempers, slow minds. Yeah, and then we get that moment where Ned has his PTSD, and he's, you know, we can tell he's a traumatized dude. Just living with a lot of stress. So that pretty much covers my number two, just all the Ned stuff. Great to see Ned. What about what you got for your number one?
One quick thing to add on to your final one before I move on to my number one, which is in regards to Ned Stark. Being a cosplayer, I constantly look at the costumes. And things are created.
His outfit's so badass this episode.
And it's something we don't see in the rest of the season. Just the way, I don't really know what it's called, but he doesn't really have a cloak, but it kind of is. Like
it's like
attached.
A half cape. Like goes over his right shoulder, but instead of like the seam being up at his neck, the seam goes diagonally downwards to the underside of his left shoulder, so his left shoulder is always exposed, but he does have a cape hanging down. It's like it's really cool. First time I noticed,
and it's like
that too.
Sewn into his back in a way.
Yeah,
so it's really I just thought it was a really different look compared to some of the other Starks and their look, you know.
Yeah, it's a really cool dynamic look, which like I had said, I never noticed before, so it's cool we both picked up on that. Thanks for bringing that up.
It might be a King's Landing type thing, too, because I think I do remember seeing stuff as the show progresses, that kind of a style.
I don't recall, but he had just arrived from the road, and I don't think he really ever adopts King's Landing.
That's true, I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's also the only time we see the Starks enter King's Landing. In that manner.
Oh yeah.
Like on a friendly note.
Yeah, true.
It's like the only time you'll see the Starks going into King's Landing like that.
Yeah, definitely. Without a military guard or something or sneaking in and out like Arya.
Right.
All right. So what's your number one?
Okay, we'll finally move on. my number one is Jon Snow atop the wall with Benjen.
Nice.
I really like the relationship between John and Benjen. Given what we know happens in season 7, it just kind of amplifies those feelings a little bit, you know, because they're talking and like that's the last time they'll talk before he goes out beyond the wall, and then we don't see him for 7 years.
Yeah, craziness.
And just watching that scene where John rides up the wall for like the first time, and then he approaches, and I think Benjen says, I wanted to be here when you saw it for the first time.
Yeah.
I think he was just talking about, you know, the wall and like, not the view, wall, in general, yeah. But the view, you know, from atop the boat beyond, from atop the wall. Yeah. And then Benjen's going off about how, you know, he just pretty much shows that he's a firm believer of what's actually beyond the wall. You know, he's kind of dropping these subtle hints, you know, and John's not ready to go beyond the wall. Like, you need to earn your keep, kind of like what we were talking about earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot of people this episode sort of putting John in his place, like Tyrion explaining to him that, you know, he's not better than the people that he's working with, his new friend, or his not friends yet, but his new compatriots, brothers of the Night's Watch, that they don't have the same upbringing, that he needs to stop being a dick, basically, which is pretty cool. And Benjen sort of hits him with the same thing. Like, you got this, you know, better than everybody attitude. Like, just cool your fucking jets, bro.
Like you'll get there in time.
Yeah.
And watching John go up the elevator, I paid pretty close attention to that, because the way that the elevator goes up, the creakingness, you know, I mean, it's a really big wall, something, you know, that he's never been on, like, anything of that matter before. So I was watching it from the perspective, a few years ago, there was this Oculus Rift event in Seattle.
For anybody that doesn't know, Oculus Rift is like a 3D goggle type thing, like a virtual reality thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was hired to go up there for a day, dressed as Jon Snow. For those who don't know, I'm a Jon Snow cosplayer. Myself and a couple of other friends, we went up there and we were kind of paid to take pictures with people while they waited in line to, you know, do this experiment or this experience. And they had the elevators. They actually made the elevators, like, full frame and everything. And they had these fans that were like stationed below, blowing air up at you like it was cold air. And then at the end of the day, you know, I got to finally do this this virtual reality experience. And, you know, I put the headset on and had this cold air blowing on me. And I'm in Jon Snow, like the cosplay, the furs, you know, and it was a really cool experience. But you go, like, watching John in that scene go up the elevator, it just reminded me of what I saw, because I've actually been in that elevator, gone up that. I mean, it takes a few minutes to get all the way to the top, and, you know, as you're going up, you're just like seeing all the Seven Kingdoms expand, and like the trees, and
oh man,
Castle Black way below you, and just a really cool experience.
Yeah, it sounds badass.
And, like, the way that he was standing when he goes up the elevator, gets to the top, and he turns, they have you do that in the Oculus Rift. I think it was called the Ascend the Wall Oculus Rift. So for listeners, if you want to Google that and see That's if so it's cool. still out there. but so, he turns, and they have you turn in that same manner. And it... At the time, they might have worked on it a bit since the last time I did this, because it's been a couple of years, and it was still in like the beta stages. But you know, they tap on your shoulder, and that signals when you're supposed to turn, because if you don't turn, your character in the virtual reality will just go towards the edge of the wall, whether or not you're looking in the right direction.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, you know, it turns, you know, it pushes you towards the edge of the wall, and then, you know, you're standing on top of the wall looking down, and it's just, it, it, it reminded me of just how John, what he must have been feeling when I was seeing it kind of through my own eyes. And
yeah, what a cool thing to see in virtual reality.
The scary part was you're like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like, I'm on top of the wall. It's cold. You can actually see the snowflakes kind of coming down. I did it a few times to make sure I caught as much of the details as I could.
Nice.
And, you know, you see all the wildlings start to charge against the wall, I guess.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it's like you see all these fires down there and you're like, wow, that's cool. Like, they're attacking the wall. I'm up here. The first time I did it, I was standing there and I saw this arrow coming at me. I'm like, oh, that's a big fire arrow. Huh. Well, it hits your character in the chest.
Huh.
And you fall off the wall. No joke. It was like, it was scary. Like, it was freaky.
You're falling.
You're spinning all different ways and whatnot. And every time I watched people do it for a few hours, but I never knew what they were seeing, you know. And they were, like, gripping onto the elevator. Because you're still technically in the elevator even when you get to all of those parts of the,
right,
the experience.
Even when you walk out onto the wall.
I went up, I think, 3 times. And all of those times, I never held on to the elevator or anything because I wanted to try to be in as much of, you know, I didn't want any of the real world to take away. Take away from the experience. So, yep, I fell off. Oh, there's also spiders. So, speaking of spiders,
ice spiders.
We get to see them.
No way.
They're off in the side. I caught that my second time going through, and then the second time I was going through, I was focused on the spiders when the arrow hits you because you have a certain amount of time. So when the arrow hit you, I was focused on the spiders, and then. As I was falling, I was trying to focus on the top of the wall that time. You know, I was just focusing on different parts just to try to get the whole thing.
Nice.
but yeah, it was just a really, seeing John in this episode go up there just really reminded me of that whole experience of being, you know, in character, in costume, going up this wall. You know, not many people got to do that. Got to do that experience.
Yeah, definitely.
You mean you guys don't go up to the wall every day?
For sure. Anything else for your number one?
I think that was pretty much it. I mean, the whole Benjen thing and John. So
nice. Yeah, that good transition into my number one, which is Tyrion and John. And we sort of talked about their encounter earlier, how Tyrion sort of saves John from having his throat slit, and he's, you know, the guys are like, what are you looking at? And he's like, well, I'm looking at you, and you've all got very unique faces, you know, maybe I'll tell my sister. So what does he say? I'm thinking about how good they would look decorating the Red Keep on spikes.
Oh, yeah.
So they all like bail, and John lives to fight another day, and then they meet up at the wall, or up on top of the wall again. And Tyrion is peeing off the top, just like he said he wanted to. And, you know, Jon tells him he's going to miss him, basically, which is cool because they've sort of connected. And he asks him to pass a message along to Bran, which was nice of him, nice of Tyrion to do. And I like Tyrion's line. He says, well, if you're going to be a cripple, it's better to be a rich cripple.
A rich cripple.
Yeah, which kind of makes Jon smile.
I was going to say, in regards to the cripple mark, for the next, like, 6 seasons, they're not that rich.
Yeah, true. He's pretty pretty dead broke, living in the woods with a giant,
with a Hodor.
Yeah, with a Hodor, and under a tree and whatnot. So, yeah, it was just kind of cool seeing Jon and Tyrion's relationship become more friendly by the end, and sets the stage for season 7 when they finally it's the bridge in their relationship that enables Jon and Daenerys to link up. You know, which is pretty cool.
That letter that he sends him in season 7, you know, that's how Jon knows that it's actually Tyrion.
Yeah, exactly. All dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes. So that's my number one. You got any other notes of things you want to mention from the episode?
I wrote down Viserys made to walk.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that's right where I was going with this too. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Danny tells the Khalasar to stop. Just like she does in season 6, I believe, after she escapes from the Dash Kaleen and kills the other Khals. She's yep. leaving, you know, she's cruising with the whole Khalasar. She tells them to stop, and they stop. And it's just like this kind of, you know, and she goes off and finds Drogon. She's like senses him in the distance. But this time she goes off by herself and ends up interacting with a different dragon, which is her brother, Viserys, who comes up. And, you know, he's being a bitch. I don't take orders from you, blah, 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 blah. And one of Khal Drogo's blood riders, like, grabs him around the neck with his whip.
That was so cool.
And, yeah, drags him across and is choking him. So hardcore. And so she lets Viserys up eventually, and Viserys tells Jorah, he's like, Mormont, kill these Dothraki dogs. And Mormont does nothing, and he's like, I am your king! And it kind of reminded me of when Tywin arrives in King's Landing, and he's at the small council meeting with Tyrion and Joffrey, and Joffrey says to Tyrion, like, I am your king! You know, and Tywin says, any man who must say he is a king is no king at all. So that made me think of this scene with Viserys saying, I am your king, made me think of that, and like how he's just does not deserve a kingship. He's no king. And Dany yeah. comes to recognize that as well, which is pretty awesome.
And I think Jorah was, you know, like he's starting to recognize, you know, the difference between Dany and Viserys. And
oh, definitely. Yeah, you can see a huge difference.
You can see the respect he has for Dany, which is, you know, kind of weird because at this moment in time, we don't know that he is betraying
spying her. On her. Yeah.
Spying
it,
on her.
It's so sad, too. I don't know if it was this episode or the last one, but Dany asks Jorah, like, what do you dream of? And he says, home, Khaleesi.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, he really likes Daenerys. Like, reminds him of his ex-wife. So he never disliked her, but he's just yep. so desperate to get home that he's willing to betray even something that he finds beautiful just for the off chance that it may get him back to Westeros. So mm-hmm. he's in a shitty position the whole time, basically. You know what I mean? Just sad.
Yeah.
I liked how the imp is chilling up there with Yoren, who is the guy who is sent down to King's Landing and ends up bringing Gendry and Arya up towards the north before being killed himself. But the imp man, half man, Tyrion, it's chilling up there with Yoren, and he's getting along with him, this kind of like rough, burly, like surly dude who's very similar to Bronn, you know.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like,
yeah,
oh,
he's
hey.
A very Bronn character. And so it makes sense. Tyrion gets along with this style of dude very well. You know, so yep. it's no surprise to see them traveling together. And he's like, you're heading to King's Landing too. You're traveling south with me. And what does he say? Yoren's like, I don't know, my lord. I travel more on the grubby side or whatever. And he's like, not this time you don't. We're staying in all the finest castles and right. everything on the way to King's Landing. So that was cool.
If you think about it, Yoren kind of has it made a little bit more than the other Night's Watch. Well, the current Night's Watch.
Oh, being as he can travel and do all
yeah,
this stuff.
Like he
yeah,
like I've always. I mean, I noticed that my first watch years ago when I watched this.
Definitely.
That he's just able to, you know, he's able to just go, come and go. You know, he's not like.
They have no idea what he's doing most of the time. You know?
Yeah, I know. Like, as long as he comes back with some people. Like,
yeah, yeah, he's the most free of all the Night's Watch.
Yeah,
he's
just, he gets to go be warm, you know, yeah, have and, probably better food and drink.
Go and sword fight. And, you know, scare little girls and cut their hair off and tell them to pretend to be boys. And
right.
Do all weird stuff like that.
Oh, man, I miss
sounds
him.
Like he's a real weird guy, put it in that perspective.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Yoren's cool, man. I like that character. He always reminds me of a pirate.
We'll probably talk about him
I think that guy
more.
Played awesome pirate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That actor.
Yeah.
other cool things. Jorah has a debates on the merits of armor versus speed with
oh.
one of the Blood Riders.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool scene foreshadowing his killing of was it Jogo, one of the Blood Riders in single combat later on this season, when the guy tries to use an Eric and it boom just connects with his armor, it doesn't do anything to Jorah and he just slits the guy's throat. Like,
I made a little note on to what you just said. I wrote it down, and it was the fact that I don't think we ever, besides Missandei, I think we don't really get to see them attempt to speak English in the way that he did.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, the Dothraki in general don't really speak much English throughout the series.
Yeah.
Good call on that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the whole armor scene, and then he started, like, attempting to speak English, and he said some words to Jorah, you know, in his language. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of, you know, we don't really get to see that much.
Yeah, and we know Jorah can kind of speak Dothraki pretty well, right?
Viserys, one of the things I kind of wrote down was when Daenerys makes the whole Khalasar stop, like we were just talking about, why she goes just wandering out into the tall bushes.
Yeah, what's up with that? Any idea?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I get that she was kind of upset that, you know, the slave was being whipped and that kind of stuff, but then she just kind of goes out and it looks like she's looking around, like she's looking for something.
Maybe she just wanted to chill for a moment.
Like, yeah, I was like, she's like, I need a breather.
A cool spot to chill.
Riding on this horse, doing nothing for hours is, you know, tiring.
Yeah. A couple other notes. We find out the crown is $6 million in debt, which Cersei ends up paying off later, $3 million to the Iron Bank of Braavos in season 7. So that's pretty interesting, and Ned is shocked that Robert has allowed the kingdom to go that far in debt, which is, like, huge. Deficit financing is never good.
I don't believe that Robert Arryn would allow this.
Yeah, which is, it sort of echoes our, like, $20 bazillion trillion national debt of the U.S., which is funny. Joffrey is being, a total dick. He's talking with Cersei, and he's, like, telling her what happened with Arya and the wolves and everything, and his mom's like, that's not what happened, you know? You fought that wolf off and blah, 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 blah. Like, one day you'll be king and you'll sit the Iron Throne and truth will be what you make it. So she's encouraging to live in his own reality and lie and just be a shitty person. And she asks him how he would handle the North after he says that they give the North too much power. And he's like, I'd double their taxes. I'd crush them if they rebel. And it just becomes clear that he has no concept of the type of behavior that earns loyalty.
Right.
Which is a parallel between him and the Mad King. I think that's something that they shared, was they were not great at gathering loyalty or making people want to be loyal to them.
Exactly. Cersei also mentioned it.
Yeah.
She mentioned, you know, to Joffrey, you know, saying something along the lines of, you know, the truth is what you make it. And then she goes off about the Mad King and Robert.
We also saw Ned being very friendly with Renly, which was funny. I guess they must know each other going back a long time because of his friendship with Robert. I had forgotten that at the moment when I was watching it, though. So I was like, whoa, he's like super friendly with Renly. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Varys tries to be super cool with Ned, but fucks up by saying, oh, we're all hoping that Joffrey makes a full recovery. I heard about your troubles on the King's Road, you know, and Ned's like, fuck you, man. Like, fuck Joffrey. So Varys was trying to get in with him by, you know, commenting compassionately about their troubles, but he realizes that he fucked up pretty quickly there, which is hilarious.
He's like, he also, when I heard him say that, he didn't say anything about, you know, Ned's son. Also,
right? Yeah,
like, I'm sorry about your son, who is like on deathbed over here.
But we'll pray for the prince. And Ned's like, oh, I wish you, you know, said a prayer for the butcher's boy. And Varys is like, oh, fuck. And then he's interacting with Baelish the first time, and we hear Baelish mention dueling for Catelyn's love, and it's funny. Ned tells him maybe you picked the wrong opponent, and he's like, oh, I never picked the opponent, I just picked the woman, you know, and you know she's worth fighting for. I want to bang your wife, Ned. And so that's pretty funny. And Ned seems to always be analyzing how people choose their opponents, Because who else does he mention it to in the same episode? He talks to someone about how they picked the right opponent. Oh, no, he's talking to Jamie, right? About how he picks the right opponents.
The right one.
How they never hit his armor and whatnot. So he's really analyzing how people pick their opponents, which is kind of funny.
Oh, one more thing about the opponents part that I kind of caught on to that I forgot to write it down, but I remember picking it up. The fact that so Ned's not really down for the whole tourney thing,
right?
And it just kind of reminded me of how
what he said to Jamie.
It's brought up to multiple events throughout the series that some people like the tourneys, and then some people don't like to show off their moves.
Right. Yeah. When I fight a man, I don't want him to know what I can do.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, although Ned probably wouldn't be fighting himself.
Exactly.
But yeah, just his attitude toward tournaments in general, bunch of, like, ceremonial wartime stuff when he's traumatized by war and doesn't glorify it anyway. So it's like glorifying something horrible, essentially, in his mind, I think. And then spending a lot of money to do it, too, which doesn't make any goddamn sense, basically.
It's one hell of a first day on the job.
Yeah. All right, that it?
I think that's it.
All right, we will take a little break and we will be back shortly. Stay with us. There's more to come. All right, we're back with news about Game of Thrones. Our first item is an article by Express. Game of Thrones Season 8, Lena Headey exposes huge Cersei secret. It's very shocking. Game of Thrones will return with a minefield of surprises for its final season, but Lena Headey has already revealed Cersei Lannister's big secret is about to unravel imminently. The Game of Thrones Season 7 finale saw the current ruler of the Iron Throne promise Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen that she'll be joining forces with her enemies to bring down the White Walkers. Unbeknownst to them, she already made a pact with Euron Greyjoy and the Golden Company to kill off whoever survives the battle against the Night King. I think her lie will be very shocking, Headey warned in the latest issue of TV and Satellite Week. Cersei is such a bitch, she said. However, Cersei could be in with a huge shock herself, as it seems she made a big mistake when she sent Euron to pick up a group of sellswords called the Golden Company. Cersei may be surprised to find out that the Golden Company are already fighting for Jon, whose real name is actually Aegon Targaryen. In the novels by George R. R. Martin, the Golden Company are largely descended from exiled knights who fought on the wrong side of a battle called the Blackfyre Rebellion. Sadly, fans may have to wait for another 2 years to see how Cersei's journey plays out. As it's believed, Game of Thrones Season 8 won't be released until 2019. HBO is said to be planning an extended production window for the final season, with filming slated to begin in October and possibly run as late as August 2018. The broadcaster has not commented on the rumors, but President Casey Bloys says our production people are trying to figure out a timeline for the shoot and how much time the special effects take. The shooting is complicated enough on different continents with all the technical aspects, and the special effects are a whole other production period that we're trying to figure out. That is a big factor in all of this. So, damn. Yeah, a lot going on there. Our next article is from Vanity Fair. Game of Thrones fans just got the best news yet about Season 8. As Game of Thrones enters production for its 8th and final season, little nuggets of spoiler-free information have come tumbling out. Fans have a long, long wait before they'll see the final product, so you can forgive their excitement over little things like the color of Emilia Clarke's hair. That particular news came via Clarke's Instagram, and today that social media platform has yielded up an even juicier Season 8 clue. It sure looks like Miguel Sapochnik, the most popular battle director in the show's history, is making his triumphant return to the series. After winning rave reviews for Season 7's Hardhome and an Emmy for Season 6's Battle of the Bastards, Sapochnik took Season 7 off. I didn't realize that. Anyone who has watched the behind-the-scenes videos of Bastards can hardly blame him for wanting a break. Yeah, quite a chaotic shoot that was. That means the two big battle episodes of Season 7, Spoils of War, Drogon versus Jaime, and Beyond the Wall, Jon and Company versus the Night King, were directed by newcomer Matt Shackman and veteran Alan Taylor, respectively. While Shackman's Dragonfire-filled episode was widely praised, Taylor had to bear the brunt of complaints over gaps in logic. Some of those gaps, admittedly, came at the script level, but others were a result of the battle shoot that was sloppier than the precise Sopochnik-style Thrones fans have become accustomed to. Even Neil deGrasse Tyson took a shot or two at Beyond the Wall just this week. Yeah, he was saying, talking about how the when they're pulling the dragon out with the chains, you can see the chains sloping over the hillside as the zombies are all pulling them out. But the chains should have been straight as an arrow, pulling the weight of the giant dragon instead of sloping over the hillside like there wasn't enough tension to keep the chains straight. So that basic physics right there that Neil deGrasse Tyson's pointing out that nobody noticed, including myself, but which is now glaringly obvious, having been pointed out. So that's why this new photo from cinematographer Fabian Wagner will come as such a delight to Game of Thrones fans who pay attention to every name in the credits. As fan site Watchers on the Wall have noted, Wagner has posted an old photo of himself with assistant Carolyn Alderson, VFX supervisor Joe Bauer, VFX producer Steve Kulback, and Sopochnik himself. Wagner captioned the photo, "Back on the Game of Thrones for the prep of the final season, and the team is back together." The photo may be old, but the caption promises something entirely new. Barring an official statement from HBO, this feels like a very solid confirmation of Sopochnik's much-hoped-for return. It's unclear how many of the final six episodes he will shoot, though the standard is usually two, and Sopochnik is good for much more than just battles. His other season six episode, The Winds of Winter, is the best-regarded finale of the show's run. There are unconfirmed rumors buzzing about the Thrones community that showrunners D.B. Weiss and David Benioff themselves want to direct the finale, though the pair have only directed two early episodes together. They obviously have plenty of experience on set. And some fans are holding out hope to see a woman behind the camera in the final season. Only one of the 19 directors to ever work on Game of Thrones has been a woman.
Can I add something onto that?
Please.
In regards to Miguel being back, he's just...
Oh, right. You know him. You've met him, right?
I have not actually met him, but I sent him a picture of my Battle of the Bastards cosplay and the shield I made. And when I was making it up, I sent it to him and I was like, hey, check this out. And then I wasn't expecting a reply or anything, but he commented on it and said, he's like, wow, that looks, I can't remember the exact, thing that he said, but it was something along the lines of, wow, that looks awesome. Now just take it outside and stomp on it some more. He then further messaged me asking me where I lived, because I was interested in being an extra on the show. And he went through a couple emails and talking to different people for me, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I've talked to Caroline, his assistant, via email, got through this whole entire loop of people, and I eventually got looped back to the extras department, who I originally contacted before I even talked to Miguel, and they basically said the same thing before. They're like, oh, if you don't live in Ireland, you can't be an extra on the show.
Oh, it sucks. So, unless you're a famous band member.
I know, right? I was like, either Mastodon or, what was his name in this earlier season? Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran, yeah.
I was like, oh, man, like, come on. Like, the band Mastodon is, like, from America. For those who don't know, they were a few wildlings in Hardhome. And then in this
last... Oh, they're from America?
Yeah, they're from... Oh, I'm going to totally butcher this, but they're from, like, Boston or something. They're from over here. They released a song called White Walker. So check that out. It's about Game of Thrones.
It's on vinyl too.
Yeah. And then they also, if you pay close attention to after the White Walkers break through the wall, there's some of the whites.
Oh yeah,
that
they're
walking
undeads
through.
Up there.
Yeah, they're undead, and they're just like walking through. So they got another cameo.
Badass.
So I'm like, man, you guys are getting all these cameos. Like,
all right. So our next article is from Time. Game of Thrones' Jaime Lannister has a major hang-up about that Cersei death theory. Although Dickon Tarly seems convinced that Jaime Lannister will end up killing Cersei in Game of Thrones' final season, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who plays the Kingslayer, isn't so sure. In an interview with InStyle, the 47-year-old actor explained that while he thinks the twist would bring the Lannisters' story full circle, Cersei's newly revealed pregnancy has made him take issue with it. It makes sense. He killed the Mad King, and now he's killing the Mad Queen, he said, before voicing his reservations. It'd be like the Red Wedding 2. That would be really horrible. I hope he wouldn't kill her because she's pregnant, like Talia, if that was her name, was killed at the Red Wedding.
Oh, Talisa.
Talisa, thank you. Thanks to the future foretold by Cersei, foretold for Cersei by Maggie the Frog during a flashback in George R. R. Martin's books, some Thrones fans have long speculated that Jaime will be the one to take out his twin sister. And when your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar, High Valyrian for little brother, shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat and choke the life from you, the witch told a young Cersei. However, an earlier line in the prophecy seems to indicate that if Cersei really is pregnant, she will either miscarry or be killed before she gives birth. You will have three, Maggie said, of Cersei's children. Gold will be their crowns. Gold will be their shrouds. On the other hand, some fans speculate that, taken together, these predictions mean Cersei will die in childbirth. Since Jaime fathered the child, then he could then still technically be considered the cause of her death. Oh!
Oh.
Our next article is by Mashable. Littlefinger from Game of Thrones joins Queen movie Bohemian Rhapsody. He may have been booted from Westeros, but Littlefinger, a.k.a. Aidan Gillen, will be back on screen shortly, this time in the upcoming Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. Gillen will play John Reed, per The Hollywood Reporter, the band's manager of 3 years before Jimmy Beach, to be played by Tom Hollander. Bohemian Rhapsody will cover Queen's history from 1970 to 1985, primarily through performances that will test star Rami Malek's chops. He'll be Freddie Mercury. Reed was the band's manager from 75 to 78, followed by Beach. When we last saw Gillen answering for Peter Baelish's insidious crimes in the Game of Thrones season 7 finale, whereupon he was executed before the assembled lords in Winterfell by Arya Stark. Little is known about Reed's departure from Queen, but he also spent 25 years managing Elton John, which is probably a bit time-consuming. Bohemian Rhapsody is due in theaters December 28th. 2018. And I think Freddie Mercury was originally supposed to be played by Sacha Baron Cohen, who played Borat. Did you know that?
Oh, that would have been cool. I mean, yeah, it might still be true, but...
They look a lot alike, so it would have been, yeah, it was cool casting, but he ended up leaving the project because they wouldn't let him go as hardcore as he wanted to go with it. He, you know, he does everything super hardcore, as you can tell from Borat and, you know, his other movies. He basically wanted to have cocaine parties with midgets running around with plates of cocaine on their heads and stuff.
What?
And yeah, the way Freddie Mercury rolled in real life, apparently.
Yeah.
And the studio wasn't down with it, so he left the project. So yeah, there's that. Our next article is from Bustle. The Game of Thrones spinoff isn't a sequel, but that's actually good news. Waiting for the final season of Game of Thrones will prove to be a long, hard road, but luckily, there is news of the HBO spinoff series to distract you. While George R.R. Martin confirmed on his blog on September 20th that there are currently 5 Game of Thrones spinoff scripts in the works, HBO's programming president Casey Bloys previously told Entertainment Weekly that the plan is to have one spinoff become a show. Yet, no matter which script HBO chooses to move forward with developing, Martin said that each of the Game of Thrones spinoffs are prequels, so you may want to spend your time waiting for season 8 and the inevitable spinoff by brushing up on your Westerosi history. The development of the Game of Thrones spinoff show has been pretty confusing, so if you've been having trouble keeping up, that's totally fair. But the latest news is that Game of Thrones show writer Brian Cogman and the A Song of Ice and Fire book series writer himself, George R.R. Martin, are officially working on a fifth script together, as Entertainment Weekly reported. On his blog, Martin reiterated the EW news, and though the spinoffs are shrouded in secrecy, Martin did have some tidbits about the fifth script to share when he wrote. He said, "I can say that, like the other pilots, it will be a prequel rather than a sequel, a successor rather than a spinoff. Brian's series will be an adaptation, meaning that it comes from an existing work, and one that will thrill most fans of the books, I think, set during a very exciting period of Westerosi history." So that leaves a lot of options, really. Who knows? EW also confirmed that all of the potential spinoffs are prequels in its fifth script announcement. All the prequel projects are set before the events of A Game of Thrones and do not involve any members of the current cast. The term spinoff is frequently used to describe these projects, though it's not technically correct, EW's James Hibbert wrote. "Even if you've exhaustively watched the TV series without reading the books, you're still fully aware of the intricate story that Martin created for his series. That means there are a plethora of exciting stories for these five scripts to be drawing from, and the glimpses of the past on Game of Thrones through Bran's three-eyed raven ability have proven to be a thrilling aspect to the original HBO series. Sure, Bran's discoveries are occasionally disturbing, you know, like when he saw Rhaegar Targaryen and Lyanna Stark getting married as Daenerys Targaryen and Jon Snow, Aegon Targaryen, had sex in the present. But it just goes to show how the actions of the ancestors of the current Game of Thrones characters are essential to the story. However, realizing that the spin-off series, or successor series, as Martin refers to them, will be set in the past is a bit disappointing for fans of the Mother of Dragons and the recently revealed Aegon Targaryen. Before season 7 premiered, Daenerys actor Emilia Clarke told Rolling Stone, "I mean, I have no doubt that there'll be prequels and sequels and who knows what else, but I am doing one more season, and then that'll be it." Jon Snow actor Kit Harington had the same type of response about his potential involvement in a spinoff when he told Entertainment Weekly that it makes no sense to start the new show with new, or it makes sense to start the new show with new characters. There's so much scope for this story that's been going for thousands of years. I'm happy to step away from Jon Snow, though I'm still interested in TV," Harrington said. Okay, that's it for the news. We might want to add that it's, you know, officially been announced, right, that Kit Harington and Rose Leslie are married. Or yep. Not married, but they're engaged, right?
They got engaged this week, yep.
Yep, so that's some more news as well. All right, next we have Raven's Calls. All right, we are here for Raven's Calls. You go first, Crow.
Okay, so the first call is from, I want to say Ad Stout.
AD, that's AD. Lady Alicia.
Oh, okay. I just started the rewatch so I can listen to the podcast. The only problem is I can't stop watching, lol. I'm on episode 6 now, dot, dot, dot. left it there.
Yeah, I knew this was going to happen when I thought of doing a rewatch podcast. I was like, oh, shit, people are going to start watching and not be able to stop watching, and they're going to have to go back and listen to our episodes
after they've finished the whole series.
So hopefully they'll get started on the rewatch, and then they'll just go back and watch one episode a week with us, even though they're already finishing the series again. Lainey Mycel says, "Ned is a no-bullshit kind of guy. Lord Varys' creepy voice starts, quote, respectfully. Sansa is an ungrateful little brat. Viserys, aside from being Dany's brother, I don't understand why she puts up with his BS. Pissing off the edge of the world. Ha ha ha. Greatness." Yeah, that was cool to see Tyrion peeing off the edge of the world.
Lara Sotelo says, "Ned watching Arya train with Syrio. # proud dad moment. Making all the dads proud."
Yeah, before being interrupted by PTSD. Sarah Larkham says, "Old Nan telling Bran about the Long Night and the White Walkers and Rob brushing off that story was a bit funny. That story old Nan was telling might be a foreshadowing for the upcoming season." I certainly hope so. "It was sad watching Ned and Catelyn saying goodbye to each other for the last time." Oh, that was something I forgot to mention.
I noticed that.
Also, saying goodbye for the last time, and then there's a slow, ominous pan that goes right up to Ned's face. And that pan is showing that something bad is going to happen.
You know it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's filmmaking telling you that this is not going to end well. They're not going to see each other again. So that was cool. That slow pan on Ned's worried look there is pretty intense.
Kristen Hall says, "Hey, Kristen. Cersei's words to Joffrey are especially telling in the big picture. Someday you'll sit on the Iron Throne, and the truth will be whatever you make it. She definitely takes that as her character's mantra.
Definitely.
Also on the chairs during the small council meeting was the Vale's emblem on the Hand's chair next to Robert's stag emblem. It's strange, isn't it, to see a direwolf? Or it's strange. It's strange. It isn't a direwolf, even though enough time has passed to make it one, right? Or does it show just how new and fragile this new world order with Ned coming in is, with its own sense of foreshadowing about the fate of the Hand?
It's interesting. I had never noticed that it was the Aaron sigil on the chair.
I didn't notice that.
Which is pretty cool. Good call on that. Yeah, Ned and Robert both loved John Aaron, so maybe they're just keeping it around as an homage to John Aaron for now. We'll have to pay attention as the episodes move along and see if they end up replacing that chair.
That's a really good catch. So That the whole series.
Good job, Kristen. I'm sure after, once Joffrey takes power and Cersei wants to, name a new hand and everything, I'm sure they change it at least at that point. But it wouldn't surprise me if Ned wants to sit on John Aaron's chair.
Yeah.
Wendy Ott Eppers says, when Ned gets to the small council meeting, they say, "Shall we begin?" Which, if I didn't even notice that, that's awesome. References the end of season 7, episode 1, where Daenerys and Tyrion walk into the map room at Dragonstone, and the last line of the episode is, "Shall we begin?" So that's great. This show is like making all kinds of crazy callbacks and references to previous seasons, which is just amazing. The depth to which they do that is just staggering. So cool.
That was one of the things that really upset me when I first watched that episode, and then it just ended. I was like,
"Oh, and you're like,
are you kidding me? Begin. So this just ended."
Yeah, right.
Okay. My Almardini says, I hope I said that correctly.
My or May. May. Either. We'll have to find out. Tell us how to pronounce your name.
Yes. Please tell me if I butchered your name.
I think I've said May before.
May. Okay. Some observations for the rewatch that I don't think I noticed before. Ned didn't relate to Sansa as much as he did to Arya. We mentioned that earlier. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Jaime is misunderstood. He is trying to get Ned's approval, but with no luck.
Yep, sadly.
Yeah.
He's trying. Gotta give him credit for trying.
Littlefinger didn't have his creepy voice yet, but was a shit disturber from the first second he was on screen. Watching season 1 makes me feel like the creators were a bit unfair. So many things seem benign, but there's so much foreshadowing going on. I also didn't notice how many times Ned's dead father was mentioned in season 1 the first time I watched it.
Wow, yeah, we got the episode in the pilot saying, your father and brother rode south at a king's demand and never came back. We've got it this episode. It's true.
And it's also mentioned in season 7, the whole thing with Jon and Dany, and when he's first wanting to go there, they're like,
Sansa brings it up. The Mad King killed our grandfather.
And then Jon mentions it in the throne room and in the presence of Daenerys.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, obviously a very important event in history that its reverberations are still being felt all throughout the kingdoms.
Yeah, exactly. I just noticed a parallel between Uncle Ben and Jon's goodbye and Ned and Jon's. Ben tells him that they'll talk again when he's back, but if I'm not mistaken, they never speak again.
Not until the battle north of the wall.
Yep. I think Uncle Benjen knew the truth about Jon, and he tried to protect him and keep him humble at the wall. He also knew the dangers ahead, but is in denial about the White Walkers. It took them 7 years to convince people about the dead, almost as long as it took winter to come. Dany is showing discomfort with the idea of slavery. I think it's because she feels like a slave herself. She eventually frees herself and feels responsibility to do the same for others. I loved seeing Maester Aemon. I really liked Maester Aemon as well.
Yeah, me too. And great call with Dany and feeling like a slave herself, because that, you know, she empathizes with the slaves because she has been sold essentially as a slave to Khal Drogo. So that really informs her psychology, I feel.
Yeah, that's like the first impression we kind of get of Daenerys is, you know, she's being sold off as a slave.
Yeah. So we have an email, and this is the email I mentioned from Lady Ellen of House Clark earlier. Hello, all. I've been rewatching old seasons of Game of Thrones, and just to let you guys know, this is from a couple weeks ago. I just thought it was relevant for this episode, so I wanted to include it. And I noticed something cool, so I thought I'd share it with you guys. In Season 1, Episode 3, Lord Snow, around the 30-minute mark, King Robert and Sir Barristan are chilling at Robert's chambers, and he seemingly randomly starts talking about his first kill. I never thought much about this scene, to be honest, other than thinking it was poignant, if not utterly random. If you go back and watch it now, however, you'll notice a lot of intriguing coincidences with some things that have happened recently. He mentions that the first man he ever killed was some Tarly boy, and then goes on to talk about how they'd never tell you about how they shit themselves when they die. I found that interesting, seeing as poor Dickon made that same observation hours before his death. More ironically, Robert states that after he killed this unnamed Tarly boy, that the Tarlys, quote, always bent the knee after that. Another intriguing observation, considering this is what led to Randall and Dickon's death that same day. Not bending the knee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, super crazy. So the Tarly boy also died because he was trying to bravely end the war by taking Robert out as he was off his mount tending to it. His horse had been shot with an arrow. Sounds similar to what Jaime did with Dany? Absolutely. So much like Jaime tried to kill Dany as she was tending to her dragon, this Tarly boy tried to kill Robert as he was tending to his horse. Anyway, I love the podcast. Keep it up. Thank you very much, Lady Ellen, for writing in. I'm happy I got to include your email this week in a relevant context. And we also have a voicemail from Kira Brown.
Hi, guys. This is Kira. I really hope I'm catching you before you guys finish your podcast. Really want to say thank you for revisiting the beginning of the series, having a really good time rewatching this. So, first things first. Jaime really likes to pluck nerves, and it seems like he knows a lot, or at least suspects, like you guys said in the previous podcast, about John/Ned/Rhaegar/Lyanna's secret. Like, why would you seek out John and Ned to test their limits? Like, is he looking for cracks in their loyalty to the crown? And also, the look that Robert gave him when he tells him about the Mad King's final words, I think Robert finally figures out what Jaime did. And it looks like a light bulb literally came on in his head. Another thing, old Nan is old as hell, and she knows a lot more about the North and probably all of Westeros than anybody in all of the planet. I feel like she is way old. She was hitting a lot more facts with her stories than most people in GOT Reddit threads. When she said, "Don't listen to crows and that they're all liars," it made me think of that section in A World of Ice and Fire where they say that men used to be able to actually talk to crows and the crows would talk back. So maybe she actually understood what that crow was saying sitting on that windowsill to Bran. And is it just me, or does it look like Benjen was way more interested in those flames than the other guy on the wall? I think that would be super cool if he was secretly a follower of R'hllor. Maybe that's why he came back from the dead. Maybe twice? And I will never not root for Arya. I love this girl, not yet a woman. I still think that Syrio Forel was one of the faceless men brought into Arya's life to train her basically from start to finish, even though in my opinion she's not quite finished with her training. That would be super crazy. And the look that Ned gives her at the end is so sad. It's like he knows exactly what's going to be coming for her at the start of these lessons. That's it. Thank you guys. I look forward to the next talk. Bye.
Thanks so much for your voicemail, Kira. Very insightful. I think we're all definitely onto something here with Jaime knowing about John, or at least suspecting. And it is interesting how he is testing Ned in various ways, probably just he probably does this to every new alpha male in the, who comes into town. But it is interesting how he's drawn to these Starks in certain different ways. I didn't notice Robert's reaction to Jaime when he told him of the Mad King's words. I'm going to have to go back and scope that out again, because that's pretty cool. It would be interesting if Robert sort of figured out what had really happened there in that moment. And I think you're definitely right about old Nan knowing what's up. She seems to have a pretty good grasp on what reality is. And there's some cool theories about who old Nan is, why her grandson Hodor is so tall. And I'll give you a hint, it relates to Sir Duncan, who stopped at Winterfell at one point. And we may have encountered old Nan herself under a different name in the Sworn Sword, one of the Dunk and Egg novellas. I'll post a video to the Game of Microphones Facebook page about that. If you guys are interested, go and check it out. I had never considered that old Nan may have been actually listening to what the ravens or the crow was saying on the windowsill there, but they do say that the ravens and the crows used to talk to people, so that would not be entirely out of the realm of possibility. I hadn't noticed that Benjen seems to be interested in the fires either, but I think he may have just been zoning out, nervous about his trip to investigate into the disturbing rumors. And I agree, Arya is definitely not done with her training yet, but I love this character as well. And it's great going back and seeing this this period of her life and her training and everything. And yeah, it is creepy, the foreshadowing of Ned's PTSD there, foreshadowing trauma in Arya's future as well. Thank you again very much for your voicemail, Lady Kira of House Brown, and I hope we hear back from you sometime soon. All right, that's our show, episode 45. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
A huge thanks to Lisa Moreno and Laura Willie Swink for gathering news and feedback. You two are amazing, as usual. Another big thanks to our guest, Travis, for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me back, Duncan.
Yeah, man, it's always good to have you. So if you guys, next week we're going to be covering episode 4, Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things, in our Game of Microphones rewatch. So if you want to write in and give us your feedback, that would be appreciated. You can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY.
And you can also write in. You can email us at game@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/GOMpodcast.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
And I want to specifically mention Rima Joe and Sean Henninger's new podcast, Strange Indeed, covering the season 1 of Stranger Things before season 2 gets dropped on Netflix later next month. And they were actually in the top 10 TV and film podcasts on iTunes over the past week and currently, I believe. So congratulations to them.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Nice. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so that's a pretty awesome podcast, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Definitely check that out. Next on Game of Microphones, there will be Still Smug Book Talk coming soon. I promise. I've just been swamped with the end of this semester that I'm in right now at school. And then we'll be covering Season 1, Episode 4, like I said, next week. Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things. Give it a watch and send us your thoughts. We'd love to read them on air. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
When I watched the Mad King dying, I remembered him laughing as your father burned. It felt like justice.
You served him well, when it was safe.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.